The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello, welcome to Football Weekly Extra. I am Max Rush and still here, despite a fly past with a banner reading, "Bring back Dave Farrar," circling Guardian Towers as we speak. More on your feedback later. Today, here's how the pod will work. Part one, Moyes' big crisis. Wenger, bit less of a crisis, but still a crisis. Part two begins in Liverpool. The worst phrase in football, apart from just the word banter, squeaky bum time. And we'll boo Sam Allardyce. Part three, we go back to Versailles 1919 as Clemenceau, Wilson and Greg Dyke sign up for the League of Nations. And we have a panel, which is good. West Ham's Jacob Steinberg is here. Did you boo Big Sam yesterday?
No, I've never booed.
Never booed? No. Even after the final whistle?
No, just walked out. Sort of in a daze of what I just witnessed.
Okay, yeah. How was it?
Really boring. Yeah.
Barry Glendenning is here.
Hello.
When was the last time you booed someone?
I don't boo either. I've never booed anyone at a sporting event.
Ian McIntosh is here. Nice to meet you, Ian.
Hello.
Boo.
It's like we didn't script that. I'd like to point out. Do you ever boo? Have you?
I'm a Southend fan, so if I booed, I'd have to boo all the time, with the exception of Tuesday when we were really good and won our first game since January the 18th.
I watched that.
Were you a part of these Southend United fans who, when they discovered that me and Helen Chamberlain were going to sing the national anthem at JPT last year, organised like a massive complaint to the point where me and Helen went, "We don't really want to go to Wembley to be booed." We did a singing lesson and everything.
That didn't go down well at all.
No, interestingly,
there was real fury.
There was rage led by comedian Terry Alderton. Interestingly, the Crewe fans didn't care. But really, Southend got totally irate about it.
Well, because it was cheapening their big day out.
Yeah, it was like demeaning the JPT.
Will you be singing at this Sunday's?
No.
JPT
Absolutely
final?
Not. I'm never going to sing at Wembley ever, I would predict.
You could play the jazz clarinet.
I could. Can I just mention, you've got a ring binder, Ian. I'm sure it's mentioned before, but it's a fantastic piece of statistical analysis. Just explain what it is.
This is my homemade Ruffman's, held together with biro and sticky tape. I cling to this like a drowning man to driftwood.
And you have every single Premier League team, every player in every team, whether they started, were sub, were unused sub, or not a member of the squad.
Every time they sneezed, coughed or farted, it's noted down here for posterity.
If they're not in the 25, do they still get in the ring binder?
They don't. No, they do, sorry, because Fulham have, I think, 41, 42. Fulham are the only team in 4 years that have seriously worried me about running out of room. They've used so many footballers now.
Do they go onto a second page?
I don't know. It's unprecedented. We're obviously staging emergency meetings in the Cobra headquarters. There may be a kind of fold-out. There may be a post-it note, something like that.
Or they may be in the Championship next year. You don't need to worry.
And then we never have to see them again.
OK, let's officially start part one. Man City went to Old Trafford and won. All the papers this morning saying Moyes is safe for now, but emphasising for now. They were toothless, United, weren't they, Barry?
Yes, they were very toothless. A fact pointed out before the game by Paul Scholes, who was a bit bewildered by the team selection when he made his surprise appearance in the Sky Sports commentary box, or not the commentary box, studio to work as an analyst.
You've written a conspiracy theory piece in The Guardian today.
Yeah, it's only my own conspiracy theory that's probably very half-baked, but I just find it curious that a man so notoriously reluctant to speak in public came out to air views, seemed to smack a bit of kicking United while they were down. He was quite supportive of Moyes, but the tacit criticism was there when he sort of slagged off Fellaini, slagged off Mata. He was critical of the team selection. Yeah, and now there's rumours going around, which may be completely baseless, that the class of 92, of which he's a part, of course, with Bex and Gary Neville and Nicky Butt and Phil Neville, who suspect may not be involved in this particular rumour, they might be fronting a bid for some Arabs to take over United.
Jacob, what do you make of the Glendenning conspiracy?
Well, I said on Tuesday that you listen to Skulls and to a lesser extent Neville, the way that they have a complete abhorrence of mediocrity probably explains why they've won so much under Ferguson and how they were taught to be like that by Ferguson. All those players just, they had no time for it at all. And you could see from Skulls the disgust that was kind of dripping off him at the state of Manchester United at the moment. And Neville, I think, has to be a bit more political, you know, partly because his brother is a coach there and he might not want to do him down too much. But Skulls had no problem at all with laying into United. And you know, and then you compare it to David Moyes' kind of negativity and some of the mealy-mouthed comments that he makes about, you know, we aspire to be Manchester City, and talking about how they were not the favourites when they were playing Liverpool. And it's just, there is a lack of ambition that's coming off the manager at the moment. And for players like Skulls and Neville, and probably Giggs as well at the same time, that's completely alien to the culture they've been brought up in since they were boys, basically.
Are the rumours of Moyes' negativity sort of penetrating every part of Old Trafford and Carrington? In the papers today, people, you know, every single sports writer is saying this is what should happen. Is there anybody who still thinks Moyes should be in charge next season?
I'm not even sure that David Moyes thinks David Moyes should still be in charge next season. He looks absolutely terrified at the moment, and no wonder. It's gone far worse than anybody ever could have expected. But the blame does have to be spread. There's a danger that he could be made a scapegoat for everything when there's so many other places. I mean, the Glazers and the lack of serious investment, the intention just to siphon off resources to pay their own interest bills, the players who have pretty much to a man been a disgrace this season. I mean, you can attack Moyes all you like, but there are expectations at that football club, and very, very few of those players are meeting them. But I can't see how Moyes can still be there in the summer. I don't know. If you were the Glazers and you had this 150, 200 million war chest, would you really give it to him?
A few games ago, I think it was after the Olympiacos game, you were looking and going, this team just isn't playing for him now. And the only way that he really succeeds is by getting rid of a lot of players, which they're starting to do with Vidic going, and probably Evra's going to go, and Rio's probably going to become an analyst, people are saying. But it's much easier to replace the manager than it is to overhaul an entire squad in a summer, which looks like what needs to be done if Moyes was to stay.
And also, I think it's a complete nonsense that people say United aren't a sacking club and they'll give him a chance. I mean, they've never had to sack anyone. Well, the current regime have never had an underperforming manager. And the Glazers are in Manchester United for one reason and one reason only, and that's to make money. And if the team isn't performing well, the commercial partners are going to get upset. They'll threaten to pull out or whatever, or won't renew their deals. And United will start to lose money. So I don't think there's any conceivable way that they would hesitate to sack Moyes.
So if you're the Glazers now, you, the three of you, what do you do?
If I was Joel Glazer, I'd go to the barber and have my ponytail cut off.
Okay, and after you've done that, and you look great.
I would imagine I'd have already had talks with my brothers and my dad about whether or not to keep Moyes in, and I'd be seriously looking at replacing him. Yeah,
I'll be getting a flight to Dortmund and finding out if Jurgen Klopp's really happy with his best players being siphoned off by Munich at the end of every season.
Yeah, I'd be going for Klopp as well. I think you look at Moyes and sometimes you say, well, it's easy to sign one matter and identify one matter as a good player, and you know, I could sit there and say I want to sign Gareth Bale. But he doesn't seem to have any idea how one matter should be used, where he should be playing in the team. He looks completely lost.
Has it been a surprise that Fellaini's not been any good either?
No.
No. I mean, he isn't that kind of player, is he?
What kind of player is he? Where does he fit?
At an upper mid-table club, then, you know, he's a battering ram with occasionally quite decent technique. You can build a certain style of play around that. But at Manchester United, using him as one of a two in a midfield, it's just not working. He's not quick enough. He doesn't seem hungry enough. He's just not a top-draw player.
You remember that quote by Dwight York saying when his first training session at United, Keane rattled a pass at his feet. He said, right, you're at Man United now. And he thought, yeah, you know, those are the stands required. Yeah.
Cantona would have trapped that.
Yeah. And Fellaini just doesn't look like a Manchester United player at all.
Was it just easy for City? Was it City only win because Manchester United were terrible? Or what did City do right?
They were very good. I mean, David Silva was mightily impressive. Their whole entire midfield was very impressive. United did make it easy for them, but it was a mighty performance by City, I thought. And the way they tore into them and basically had the game won after 40 seconds. It's, you know, United got into the game sort of for 15 minutes towards the end of the first half, but that was it. They were second best throughout, apart from that.
Ian McIntosh, is your first ring binder action play.
What? Trying to do that discreetly with no one looking. I was just going to point out that Man City now have 5 clean sheets on the bounce, which is ominous for everyone around them in the title chase.
And just finally on Man United, banner stories. One is the stewards having to fend off people ripping up the Chosen One banner of a picture of David Moyes inside Old Trafford, and apparently, I don't know if it's happened yet or it's going to happen, but a plane's going to fly around over the top of Old Trafford saying Moyes out. Yes. Will this have any would either of these have any impact?
I think what would have more impact are fans reportedly having a go at Ferguson at Old Trafford on Tuesday night, because obviously Fergie was the one who picked Moyes, so it would probably take him distancing himself partly to for the wheels to start whirring for Moyes to go.
Yeah, Oliver Kay made a very interesting point in the Times that Ferguson has been very, very quiet, whereas if he came out and backed Moyes, perhaps that might stabilise things a bit, but he's kept his own counsel for a number of months now.
Barry, do you have a conspiracy that Fergie's happy that this is all happening? That it makes him look better?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Interestingly, I checked a website this morning to see about getting a banner to trailed from an airplane.
How much does it cost?
It begins at £5.50. Sorry.
That's good value. Is that a remote control plane?
It starts at £550 for an hour. But interestingly, on the website I looked at, there was an endorsement from Jerzy Dudek, who had obviously hired one.
What to say? Would you reckon he did it anonymously about how good he was?
Well, I suspect it was in the personal messages section, so I suspect he may have, I don't know, wished someone a happy birthday or maybe proposed to Mrs. Dudek through the medium of banner trailed from airplane.
And is it the same price regardless of length of banner?
Well, there are different types of banner. So you can sort of get one trailing a big sort of rectangular plastic tarpaulin-y type sheet, okay, or you can get one by the letter. I think the more letters there are, the more expensive it is. So the United fans who are chipping in to pay for this, apparently they're paying £1,000. They're going wrong one hyphen Moyes out exclamation mark. So they're just flashing their wad around, really. It's
You get worried if you had too many letters, and like when you write in your exercise book at school, the final letters scrunch up at the end. Did you look into cloud writing?
Glendening out would be quite expensive because there's 11 letters there.
Did you look into cloud writing or the red arrows, perhaps?
No.
Okay, all right. Should we talk about
Arsenal? Are you basically saying my research into this field wasn't thorough enough?
Inferior research on banners, but well done.
Lazy research.
Yes, well done for doing a bit of journalism before the pod. Arsene Wenger's had a terrible birthday week, hasn't he? First Chelsea, now only getting a point against Swansea. Is the fourth the best they can do?
Yeah, if they can get fourth, because it's in Everton's hands now, with Everton due to play Arsenal at Goodison Park and with a game in hand. They win both of those games 1-0, and there's nothing Arsenal can do. I was at the Emirates on Tuesday, and it was sad. It was very, very sad. There was so much anxiety, both on the pitch and in the stands, that it's just not a happy club at the moment. And even confirmed Wengerettes, people who've backed him through all the
Wengerettes is not their version of the Hammerettes.
Let's hope not. But it's people are losing faith very, very quickly there.
Did Gary Monk have a point in the last minute when, who was it, De Guzman was clean?
It was De Guzman, yeah, I thought so. I can't imagine, put it this way, I can't imagine if Arsenal were going up the other end, the referee blowing the full-time whistle. I certainly can't imagine that so many people would let it drop so quickly if it wasn't a club like Swansea. I think if it was Chelsea, we'd still be listening to Jose Mourinho talking about it now. I was very surprised he blew the whistle.
Is the worst thing for Arsenal fans that every season they're given just a tiny bit more hope, and a bit more hope for a bit longer?
This has been the season they've had the most hope since probably, 07, 08, I guess, when they went very close to win the league before, maybe the Eduardo injury saw them tail off, the trauma of that. But it is kind of depressing what's happened, because they looked like a proper side for much of the season, for the first half of the season. And I don't think they've ever played fantastic football this season. This hasn't been, I'd say, the greatest football you've seen a Wenger side play, but what you saw at the start of the season was an ability to close out matches, and now that's gone as well, which you see, you know, it's kind of gone back to the farcical last-minute own goal.
You could see it coming a mile off as well. Last 10 minutes, you could see that they were going to concede. Yeah. Just passes going astray, movement was awful. They just lost their composure completely.
A rumour on the front of the Guardian saying, well, the front of the sports section, it's not such a big story, but Bakary Sagna to Man City. Any thoughts?
Well, they've offered him a 3-year deal, apparently, and I suspect he may snap their hand off, because I would imagine they're financially making it worth his while. It's going to be probably his last contract, and why shouldn't he go there, you know? Unless Arsenal top their offer and make it worth his while to stay.
Arsenal home to City on Saturday. From what you saw on Tuesday, any way Arsenal can win that, Ian?
Lasagna? That may be the only thing. No, it doesn't look very good unless there's some kind of response, you know, from the team, some kind of reaction to these results. I would be very surprised if it's anything other than a narrow Man City victory.
And Manchester United play Villa, another disappointing performance. Where does that put Moyes? I'm not saying it's happened yet, but if it does, out
probably not. Two or three days before they play Bayern Munich in the Champions League, but which. You imagine they're going to get quite the gubbing from the new German champions. But they're pretty awful at home, United, and Villa are a good counter-attacking side away.
Right. Thanks, Jacob. That'll do for part one. In part two, we discuss Liverpool and Everton both being quite good at football. Welcome to part two. Let's start at Anfield. Liverpool 2, Sunderland 1. Right, my Sky HD box lost signal after 10 minutes. That terrible blue screen, and there was nothing I could do. I was a broken man. What happened?
Sunderland came with the plan of just blocking up, basically. They had a sort of flat back five. They had two defensive midfielders in front. And for the better part of the first half, it worked brilliantly because Liverpool were pretty much reduced to long shots. And then one of those long shots went in, free kick from Steven Gerrard. 3 minutes after the break, Daniel Sturridge scored a wonderful goal for 2-0, at which point Liverpool's bottom lost all control. Sphincter rattling like you wouldn't believe, squeaks everywhere. Sunderland came back to 2-1, came very close to 2-2. But Liverpool just about held out.
Barry, were you proud as a Sunderland fan of your defensive performance? The Gus bus was parked.
I was slightly fed up because once again Sunderland raised their game against vastly superior opposition, but it weren't quite good enough to take anything from the game. You know, a point probably would have been fair. I'd say Liverpool looked pretty relieved afterwards to got their win. So some awful refereeing decisions. I mean, Liverpool could have had two penalties. Virginie, who had a mare in the heart of the Sunderland defence, should have been sent off. But and that's sort of indicative. There was quite a lot of bad refereeing during the midweek games. But yeah, I wasn't expecting Sunderland to get anything from the game. And if you'd said to me beforehand,
I'd have taken
2-1, no problem.
That's the dream, isn't it? Ian, you using your ring binder, how impressive is 7 wins on the bounce for Liverpool?
It's the second longest run this season, as Barry and I were discussing earlier. It's only Man City who've won 8 on the bounce. One more, Liverpool will equal that. What's more impressive is just the fact they hardly ever failed to score. The last time they failed to score in the league was against Arsenal on November the 2nd, back when Arsenal were looking indomitable. They're just covered in goals, dripping in them.
Clearly they're in the title race. They've got some difficult games to come, though. They've got Spurs, Man City and Chelsea, but all at Anfield. Can they sustain it?
It's not quite if they win every game they win the league, is it? But because I think if City can still finish above them, even if they lose at Anfield. But it's just so refreshing, Brendan Rodgers, the way they're going about it, and the revival that's been sparked within 18 months of him coming in. Is quite incredible, actually, and the effect he's had on some players with a small squad. You know, I think Paul Doyle found the stat that Liverpool have made the least or fewest substitutions in the league this season, and it's quite a way short of most other sides. And he was saying partly that's because maybe they don't have that much depth. You know, you're not going to take off Suarez and bring on Aspas. There's not a lot of point to be gained from that. There's not a big point to be gained from that. But equally, he gets his pre-match tactics spot on all the time.
What's Brendan Rodgers doing right that David Moyes is doing wrong? everything.
I think one of the major benefits for Rodgers is, and this isn't to take anything away from him, but with no European football, he's got pretty much a full week to prepare his team for every fixture, which may be one of the reasons Jacob said
that.
Yeah, the lack of substitutions.
I said that before Mourinho said it, by the way. I said that ages ago.
He's getting his game plan right. I mean, I was wrong about Brendan Rodgers. I thought he was the right man for Liverpool, but over a five-year period, I thought it would take... I didn't even think they'd get Champions League football this year with the heavy changes in style that he was making. That takes a lot of time, usually. But this, they are so far ahead of schedule. And looking at the table, I mean, no team has ever finished seventh and then gone on to win the title the next season, not in the Premier League era, at least. But they're practically in the Champions League already. There's an 11-point gap now. They think they only need sort of three wins from the last seven, and they're in the top four.
You look at the coaching effect he's had on players. You look at someone like Raheem Sterling, who when he came through just looked like another one of these quick, kind of skillful wingers who would probably be fairly interchangeable with all the other quick, skillful wingers that England have. But actually, he's turning him almost into some kind of another sort of Coutinho-style playmaker to go along with the speed and skill he already has. It was the game against United where he got the ball against Evra, and he kind of thought about taking him on, and then thought, actually, no, I'm not sure if I can beat him with what I'm about to do. So instead of just sort of blindly charging down to the byline and putting in a rubbish cross, he just checked back and passed it, and Liverpool kept the ball and continued their attack. And it's that kind of intelligence that he's bringing to the team and giving
and Flanagan
players
as well. Coming and done really well.
Flanagan was, I mean, he was culpable for the Sunderland goal, but he's been brilliant. I think he's played 9 games on the bounce in the league now. Complete uncompromising old-fashioned fullback, and doesn't seem to get fazed by anything. Against Manchester United, he went walloping into a 50-50 with Van Persie in the first couple of minutes. He shows no fear at all. But I think Sterling's been brilliantly improved under Rodgers, but Sturridge is a real success story, because you used to watch him at Chelsea and he was the archetypal one ball for me, one ball for everyone else on the pitch kind of striker, and I didn't think he'd do very well at Liverpool, but he's a player transformed. He's so selfless now, so much more intelligent, yet still maintaining that kind of instinctive spark that makes him a special player.
Yeah, it's the first time two Liverpool players have scored 20 goals since Roger Hunt and Ian St. John.
50 years or something, isn't it?
Everton won at Newcastle. Ross Barkley scored a great goal. Good to see some comparisons to Maradona already. You know, let's put as much pressure on him as we can. Can we revel for a second in just how good a goal it was?
Yeah, I thought he should have passed to Lukaku.
I think the only reason he scored it is because Coloccini fell over in a comedy style in the Newcastle penalty area.
Neville said that's the reason he fell over is because the sheer change of pace from Barkley. Just defenders don't like that, and he had a little bit of a dip, didn't he? Sort of in the start of the year, Barkley, but he's coming back roaring into form.
Yeah,
now.
He's adjusted really well. It was a superb goal. And there's a funny thing about Barkley. He was one of the England under 17 team to win the World Championships a few years ago. And he's the only one now playing regularly for a Premier League team. All really? The rest have fallen by the wayside. He's also the only one to have suffered a very serious injury shortly afterwards that threatened to end his career, and has had to work his balls off just to get back playing professional football again. So there might be something in that, and ideas of people having perhaps too much too young.
Take him to Brazil?
Oh, God, yeah.
I was just going to say, it's a problem for Moyes as well, isn't it? On the same night that United were losing badly 3-0 at home, his successor, Everton, was winning brilliantly 3-0 away with a young attacking team.
How impressed have you been by Roberto Martinez? You know, he's been talked about potentially, or like unlikely to get them, the new Barcelona manager, even the new Manchester United manager.
Well, I'm hugely impressed by him, because I used to be a bit sceptical when everyone was sort of blowing smoke up his nether regions as Wigan manager. I wasn't convinced, because despite their sort of fancy dannery and their eye-catching football and style of play, they were always hovering around the relegation area, and you know, often it took these extraordinary late season runs to keep them up, and eventually they went down, albeit in the season they won the FA Cup. But I think he's proved beyond doubt now that I'm a know-nothing idiot and he's the real deal.
The race for fourth, here are the fixtures. Arsenal have got Manchester City, Everton, West Ham, Hull, Newcastle, West Brom and Norwich. Everton have got Fulham, Arsenal, Sunderland, Palace, Manchester United, Southampton, Manchester City and Hull. And Spurs are away at Liverpool at the weekend. And then All their games look winnable after that. Sunderland, West Brom, Fulham, Stoke, West Ham, Aston Villa. Who is your money on?
Maybe still just about Arsenal.
Yeah, I can see Arsenal just about getting there, maybe on the last day of the season.
Barry?
I would like to see Everton get it, just for a change. And I think Martinez would do very well in Champions League. And, you know, Arsenal are there every year. I think the way they're going, they could play in it every year and never, ever, ever win it. So, you know, let's have someone else in there just for a change.
Okay, we'll try and make that happen for you, Barry. Jacob?
Do you have that much influence?
in the game?
Yeah.
I don't know. There was once a Manchester United fan when I went away to Cluj because we supported them on Soccer M and we called them Cludge because, you know, it was vaguely amusing. And I wore a Cludged top in the Manchester United end, which was naive, it turns out. And apart from, you know, people threatening to rip my throat out and stuff, one Manchester United fan did turn to me and tell me that I was everything that is wrong with football, which I thought was quite a grand claim.
Right.
Everything. Like, including, you know,
excessively high ticket prices.
Yeah.
Your fault.
FIFA.
Diving.
Yeah. Perhaps corruption. Homophobia. Racism. No, just me. Jacob, you were at Upton Park yesterday to see a fantastic victory for West Ham, 2-1 over Hull.
Yeah,
tell us all about it.
Great. I don't think I've ever spent so long looking at a clock, willing it to reach the 90th minute. And it was just, it's just one of those games which sums up Allardyce in that objectively, it's impossible to say that Sam Allardyce hasn't done a good job. He got them promoted at the first time of asking. When he came, the club was on its knees, really. And they finished 10th last season. They're pretty much on course. You were barring a spectacular collapse now to stay up and, you know, maybe finish in this sort of weird mid-table situation we've got going on in the Premier League this season as well. They've won at Spurs twice this season. He beat Chelsea last season. They got that draw against Chelsea a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, there have been good moments here and there. Last night they went 1-0 up against 10-man Hull after 20 minutes, and it's not that they didn't create a chance; they didn't get close to creating a chance. And the goal that they won it with was just a shank by the Hull defender. It's just they had no idea what to do with the ball, and the Hull play. It wasn't even like it was difficult for Hull to pass the ball and keep the ball. And they had much more possession than West Ham did in the second half. And they were, you know, if they got a draw, it wouldn't have been easy to say they didn't deserve it. You know, they would have deserved it. And West Ham just had no idea going forward at all. And people, they never liked Allardyce from the start. They, mm-hmm. he was never liked for about 10 years at West Ham, long before he got the job. He goes against, you know, the ethos of the club. You talk about the Academy of Football, you know, whether you want to argue whether that's true or not, but you know that is something that's there when you walk out onto the pitch. It's right by the tunnel, that sign, the Academy of Football. You know, they've had great players in the past. You know, when I started going, they used to play great football. They're players like De Canio and Berkovic and Sinclair and then Joe Cole, and now you're watching, you know, Kevin Nolan, Matt Taylor, and it's very, very dull. At the same time, he's kept them up, which is what he's being asked to do.
Yeah, do West Ham fans look at, say, Hull and more so Swansea and even more so Southampton as teams, not massive teams, who are surviving and doing better and actually playing good football at the same time?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much you would say Hull. I think they're just, you know, Hull are playing a competent style of football, which, you know, it's nothing special. It's good. It's, you know, it's not it's like Swansea. I don't think it really is that level. But, you know, it's there are different expectations. You know, for Swansea, they came up doing that. They built that for 10 years, that kind of style. And they were able to do that in a lower pressure environment in the lower leagues. It's a bit easier to do that compared to where there's all this money in the Premier League, and when West Ham are a team that is gearing up to move into a massive stadium and they can't afford to maybe take a gamble on someone like Martinez and let him try to implement a new philosophy into the club. Similarly, Southampton, again, they've come through with all these youngsters. There's a bit more money at Southampton.
Yeah.
And you know, they've been winning for years as well. They've come up through the divisions, winning each, well, finishing second in the Championship, but coming up through from League One, winning all the time. And they've got a great youth set up there. And so at West Ham, it's been a bit more of a shambles for the last 6 or 7 years. And there's more expectation and not enough time to go and say we want to be the new Swansea.
Barry, Ian, as more objective viewers on this, impartial, should West Ham fans just lay off Allardyce? He's doing all right, isn't he?
Not so much lay off. I mean, I think Jacob's points are all... we're all entirely justified, but it's kind of one win away from mission accomplished now for Allardyce. You can't overstate how much trouble they were in after the Icelandics and Scott Duxbury and Avram Grant. I mean, they should be now where Coventry and Portsmouth are by rights with the trouble that they were in at the time. But Allardyce got them back up at the first attempt, and looks like he's going to keep them up now. But I think that's it. I think the cycle's complete and time for a new manager, because they're not much fun.
It's been bubbling over for a while, though. You know, when they're in the Championship, there was a game where they won again against Peterborough away, 2-0, but they were pretty bad that night as well. And I think that afterwards Allardyce said something like they're all deluded and they talk bollocks. So it's all been
diplomatic.
So it's just that, you know, he doesn't really like West Ham fans. I think he's just kind of there because they're paying him money. And he wants, you know, to keep his reputation up. They don't like him. And if he was to go at the end of the season, which I think is increasingly likely, there wouldn't be any... no one would be particularly upset if that was to happen.
Did you like his Hulk Hogan?
Yeah, again, you know, that's just not going to help him. You know, it just goes to show that how fragile it is, that if a manager is getting booed when they've won, you know...
He's on a
hiding to nothing, and... another thing that happened was when the second goal happened, Nolan, who has done this, when he scored against West Brom a couple of weeks ago, he sort of glared at the crowd because they've been given, he's not particularly popular, Kevin Nolan, and he booted the ball last night into the east stand. It was very strange. It was a very strange response to a goal being scored, to smash the ball into your own fans. It didn't really get picked up on because of the... what happened with Allardyce afterwards, and you could just say maybe he was letting a bit of frustration loose, but you know, it was a bit odd.
All right, cheers, Jacob. That is part two. In part three, we investigate the League of Nations. Right, welcome to part three, the final part until Jimbo returns on Monday, so you can all be happy about that. Right, the League of Nations. What does the pod remember about the actual League of Nations from O-level history?
It wasn't very effective.
No. Formed in 1919 effort to prevent another world war, it singly failed in its objective. No one really believed in it.
It lacked its own army. This was a problem.
It did. And Mussolini, I think, said something along the lines of it had the courage to shout at sparrows but not at eagles.
Exactly right. It was dissolved in 1946 and replaced by the United Nations, which has been really successful, such as in Ukraine, sending one man in saying, calm down, everyone, and Putin chucking him out. But I think this is for a different podcast. What do you make of the League of Nations competition that... UEFA have put together, intended as the third major tournament for European countries after the World Cup and the European Championship? It's been given the go-ahead. It will start in September 2018. We'll provide four qualifying spots for Euro 2020. There are going to be four divisions subdivided into four smaller pools. Each division will have a final four competition between the winners of each pool. There'll be promotion and relegation. Any thoughts? Are you still with us?
Well, at least it's nice and simple.
So basically, I think what it basically is friendlies are rubbish now, and this will make friendlies slightly better.
I think it's a wheeze dreamed up by people in UEFA's dormant volcano, where they live in Geneva, to keep UEFA drawmeister Gianni Infantino off the streets and really, really busy. Because
see the bald chap.
He's the bald guy who's in charge of their draws, and this is going to pretty much quadruple, if not dodecaduple, his workload.
As long as they make the ping pong balls easier to open for this draw,
a little button maybe.
Barry, you're not a fan, or you vaguely pointless.
This is the kind of thing I'm not even going to bother being annoyed about for at least another 3 years.
It's a long way away, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anything that isn't an international friendly is probably going to be better than an international friendly. I mean, anyone who went to Wembley for England Denmark will probably still be in rehab for that. That's the thing, isn't it?
We all watch just England friendlies. Maybe other friendlies are quite good.
No, I watch Ireland friendlies.
home nation friendlies are rubbish. But maybe, you know, if you're watching
Italy, Spain, France,
be careful, Jacob. Good. There are people on the blog going, I can't believe they don't watch other international friendlies. They call themselves football fans.
Speaking of which, we should mention your special for anyone who hasn't heard about it yet. You were the star of a new Downfall spoof, which is very, very good.
Yeah, somebody... The thing where Hitler gets upset about various different things, you know, and it's pretty much everything has been parodied. And the, I don't know if you've seen it, Jacob.
Yeah, I've
seen it. Well, what's he called? He's called Tim, and he clearly listens to the pod.
He clearly listens to every football pod that's ever been made.
So the attention to detail is brilliant, but there is a very good bit where... is it Hitler saying that he wears a Shakhtar Donetsk away kit for five-a-side, which is very good, and Fernando Duarte, who gets a punch in the face right at the end of it. But it's mainly at my expense, but I see it as love, because I have to, otherwise I'd be really sad about the world. But hang on, this could be good, couldn't it? If there's a top division and it's England v Germany and it means something...
There's two main reasons it could be good. One is, as I say, it's not an international friendly. It'll be teams playing teams around their level. But also for the very, very weak teams who generally play flat back nines and try not to get humped 8-0, they're going to actually have a chance to regularly play teams of their own standard and play more, you know, normal formations, actually go out and try and win a few games. And that can only be good.
Although... That's good for them, but every single major manager of the Premier League will be angry if England are playing Germany. It's competitive, and all those players will get niggled. So what you'll get is England reserves v Germany reserves, presumably.
Possibly, depends on the scheduling. If they're sensible about it and surround them with international weeks, it might be a little bit better. But if they try and crowbar it in so you only get 2 days either side, I think you're right.
Does anybody want to talk about Spain? Producer Ben said we're not talking to Sid, just so I get insulted more for not talking about Spain.
Real Madrid lost last night against Sevilla, which I would imagine is quite kicking the swingers for them, which they perhaps didn't see coming. So that's great news for Barcelona and Atletico Madrid,
who both won. Sorry, one interesting angle from that is if Manchester United are looking for a top draw manager who knows how to handle big personalities, two defeats on the bounce and third place, Carlo Ancelotti might be available at this rate.
Bad news for Barca is Victor Valdes has done his cruciate. So he's out for the season and the World Cup.
That's the
end of his Barcelona career.
Yeah, so he finishes his Barcelona career on a stretcher, which is a shame.
Speaking of competitive leagues around Europe, well done to Celtic, whose 5-1 defeat of Partick Thistle means they clinched their 45th Scottish title with 7 games to spare. The earliest the championship has been won since Rangers won on the 16th of March in 1928-29, of course. Celtic are mere 26 points ahead of Aberdeen in second place. Anyone have any thoughts on this?
No.
Good. And in Germany, Bayern Munich champions for the 24th time with a record 7 games to go after a 3-1 win at Hertha Berlin. 25 points ahead of Dortmund. Elsewhere, Nottingham Forest. We touched on it on Monday. Neil Warnock has very sensibly decided to stay at wonderful employers TalkSport. So Hoddle, Zola and Malky Mackay linked. Who would be best for that gig? Surely Mackay.
Yeah, probably Mackay. Having seen... Zola, you'll get some good football, but not a lot of steel, especially when things start to go wrong.
I think Mackay might have had his fill of reckless foreign owners as well for the moment. So he might just hold off, maybe even wait for the West Ham job if that comes up in the summer. You would think, with the way that their board is at Forest, they're probably going to do something like Stuart Pearce and try and win.
Stuart Pearce has said he doesn't want to do it either.
Has he?
Yeah, he wants to stay at TalkSport as well.
How much are they paying you people?
Well, they must be paying them a lot because they're not paying us enough.
Do you reckon what... Have you been linked with it yet? Or us?
Do you fancy it, Barry?
Well, we managed Hull. We have 100% success rate for the one game we managed Hull.
That is true. Although we didn't actually go... We were at Hull.
No, it wasn't. Sorry, it wasn't Hull. Who did we manage?
Crystal Palace. We managed Crystal Palace.
Well, Steve Parrish said we could manage Crystal Palace, but you couldn't make it because you had a game, so you couldn't make it till half time.
We managed Crystal Palace as much as Alan Pardew managed Newcastle in the last two games, I would say. Actually, less so.
Yeah, but at least they won.
I've got here, Barry, that you want to mention Hereford and their winding up order on the 7th of April over an unpaid £78,000 tax bill. I mean, it's depressing when it's such a small amount of money compared to what big proper football has.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's sort of a week's wages for some, or quite a lot of Premier League footballers. They're in the conference. They're probably realistically going to need £300,000 to get through the season. They've only got 3 points from the last 10 games, and they're really, really in the mire. Sort of puts the problems of clubs like Man United in perspective. So, you know, if you've got a few spare pennies knocking around the change jar, there are ways of donating it to the Hereford cause.
There's a little part of you just think some Premier League players should just give them the money, because they'd be a hero, wouldn't it? It'd be a very sensible...
thing to do?
It's not unprecedented. I think Shearer and Gascoigne made significant donations to Gateshead a few years ago, I think.
Good luck to Hereford. Prediction for the JPT final. Chesterfield v Peterborough. Well, I will not be singing the national anthem.
It's an interesting one, actually, because Chesterfield manager is a guy called Paul Cook, who has a lot of form in the field of winning cup finals. He won the FAI Cup final in Ireland with deeply unfashionable Sligo Rovers against trendy Dublin opposition, Shamrock Rovers 1 year, Shelburne another, both on penalty shootouts. He also won the league with Sligo Rovers. So he seems to be a sort of a young, really up-and-coming manager, and I'm hoping to chat to him tomorrow for a piece, a preview piece on the Johnson Payne's Trophy.
Do you want some feedback that we got from Monday's pod? It's always nice.
Oh, McIntosh does it.
I wasn't here.
I wasn't here either.
It's all right. Nothing against you, Barry. Good. Frigerty writes, I like Rushton, but his witticisms have the spontaneity of an Alan Shearer goal celebration. And Papa Bendy writes, hi, Max, I was wondering if anything amusing has ever happened to you in connection with a microwave and Trevor Nelson. Ian, you're nodding, and we've never met, but you know it already. Interestingly enough, and I'll leave you with this until probably next October if I'm ever brought back, I do still have Trevor Nelson's spare microwave, and I bought a table from Habitat for £80 to put the microwave on, because for the past year and a half, it's been on the floor. And anyone who has a microwave on the floor should know it's much more convenient if the microwave is at table level for when you put things in and take things out.
Why did you buy an £80 table to put a microwave in? Why it's don't got, you know, just throw the microwave out?
No, well, because I quite like the microwave, and it's got other levels, so I've put my baking trays on that. Because my baking trays were all in the oven. You can fade it down whenever you like, producer Ben, but my baking trays are all in the oven. So then when you turn the oven on, they all get hot and they all get overused, and now they're out on the two levels below
I would
table.
Venture to say you're the only man I know who owns baking trays.
No, I've got baking trays.
Well, roasting tins, trays. You know, anything that you put, you want to put some sausage in the oven, you have to put them on a tray, don't you?
Yeah.
I would say you're the only man who doesn't have any. What do you ever roast anything?
Yes. isn't that a roasting tin?
Well, you know.
Or a roasting dish. Baking and roasting food are completely different disciplines. It's like frying, boiling. It's not the same. Have we stopped yet?
Turn around, producer Ben just won't be there.
This is the best bit.
Wait, hold on. Now.
Yeah, carry on.
Jacob has recently bought his own place, moved in. Do you have... What's your kitchen chattel situation?
I think I've got what Max has. Dishes, basically. You know, it's basically the same,
isn't metal,
it?
Metal, aren't they? You've got metal.
Metal, you've got...
Well, basically, what I'm asking... Do you bake stuff?
No. Okay. So there we are. Producer Ben says, can we pick out a fixture so we end on not such a low? you've all got the fixtures in front of you. Game of the day is at the Emirates, surely Arsenal City and Liverpool Spurs. They always say, oh, this is one. This is always a fantastic fixture.
I think game of the day is Southampton v Newcastle, which has to be the most pointless fixture in the history of association football.
But... You know, the referee is...
Mariner, isn't he?
Right. Yeah, so...
All eyes on Andre Mariner.
Well, they've basically given him a game that, you know, there's no point in even playing it. It's 9-8. Neither of them can get relegated. Neither of them can qualify for the Europa League, I think. And Newcastle have to travel all the way down to Southampton for this complete monumental waste of time.
All the Southampton and Newcastle players should try and get exactly the same haircut, shouldn't they? Anything to make them all look as much alike each other as they possibly can.
Well, they're all coming in the same outfit, so that's a start.
Is Pardew back?
Yeah, it's redemption time for Pardew. Well, he's allowed in the stadium, I think, but not the dugout. And redemption time for Mariner.
Okay, so that's the game of the day that we've picked out. Look out.
No, that's the game of the day I've picked out. But there are
Ian,
others.
Do you want to pick out a fixture?
And beat that?
Yeah.
I think Liverpool-Tottenham on Sunday will be the big one. See if Liverpool can equal Manchester City's 8-match win streak.
Whenever Spurs play someone good, they lose about 8-0, don't they?
Yeah, they're not very good at football. They keep somehow getting results out, but I don't think they've actually played that many decent performances since Tim Sherwood was there, though he continues to prove people wrong and prove that everything you think you know about football is completely wrong. But I would be amazed if they... Actually, I won't say that because I hex people all the time. And the one group of fans I really don't want to upset by hexing is Liverpool, because they get really angry. It'll be a Tottenham win. There you go.
Okay, and Sherwood will be there next season? No.
No.
No chance.
Good God, no.
Van Gaal?
Possibly, if he doesn't go anywhere else.
Might he go to United?
I think he wants to go to Manchester United. But I would imagine there's going to be a full sweep and clear at Tottenham over the summer.
A last word from you, Jacob.
What, do you want me to pick out a game? Or?
Just a final thought.
A like final thought? Like Jerry Springer?
Like Jerry Springer, yeah.
Well, Barry, you should invest in some kitchenware.
I have kitchenware here.
You know takeaway menus don't count as kitchenware.
I cook.
What's your signature dish?
I do an excellent Irish stew, which has loads of Guinness and red wine in it.
Is there anything else in it? And do you cook it? Jimbo's back Monday. All the best.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.